On the way to Jerusalem, Jesus was going through the region between Samaria and Galilee. And as he entered a village, 10 lepers approached him. Keeping their distance, they called out, saying, "Jesus, Master, have mercy on us." And when he saw them, he said to them, "Go and show yourselves to the priests." And as they went, they were made clean. Then one of them, when he saw that he was healed, turned back, praising God with a loud voice. He prostrated himself at Jesus' feet and thanked him. And he was a Samaritan. Then Jesus asked, "Were not 10 made clean? But the other 9, where are they? Was none of them found to return and give praise to God except this foreigner?" And then he said to him, "Get up and go on your way. Your faith has made you well." The Gospel of the Lord. Chuck, thanks for stepping up a moment ago to read the lesson. I always enjoy it when Chuck reads, and we've got some fabulous readers here at St. Peter's. I want you to know that during the over the course of convention, Bishop Dan mentioned Chuck in his address to the diocese with great fondness and appreciation for the work that Chuck did. He spent 3 years as the canon missioner for education in the Diocese of Nevada, and the bishop was recounting the fabulous work that Chuck did over those 3 years and the groundwork that he laid for what has now become a mission for congregational vitality. So I just thought you folks ought to know that. Yeah. Well, we could call today Leprosy Sunday. And the good news is, you know, if you're feeling a little beat up by life, or if you've ever felt like a leper at some point in your life, maybe that's going on as we speak, today is your day. Today is your Sunday. It's Leprosy Sunday. I mean, we've got Naaman the leper from the story that Chuck read to us from the book of Kings, and one of the morals of that story is that you do not want to tick off the commander of the army that has conquered you. And when it says, as Chuck read, he went off in a rage, this could have gone south in a big hurry, if you think about it. I mean, he could have called his army and just sort of wiped out the whole village that Elisha was hanging out with, and he wasn't even one of theirs. You know, they could just blame it on him. And instead, some folks kind of intervene and go, "Oh, you know, if he asks you to do something really hard," and he finally relents. And don't mess with people who have big armies. And then we have the story of the 10 lepers in the Gospel according to Luke, and one of the questions that arises in this story is, what sets apart the one from the other 9? Anybody want to take a stab at that? His thankfulness, his gratitude. Is it possible, though, I mean, think about it, that the other 9 were so blown away by what happens to them on the way to see the priest that they just continue on their way, and they're grateful beyond measure and probably end up going back to their village, by the way, they would not have lived among. They would have been on the edge of the village. They would have been outcast. They would have had no family that would claim them. And now they're going back to wherever it was that they were living on the outskirts of. And all of a sudden, they have the possibility of entering, for the first time in their lives, entering into the community. I mean, they've got to be just completely blown away and filled with gratitude, if you think about it. So being grateful may not be what separates them, but it was a nice guess. Belief in what? Okay, you're getting warm. She's getting a little warm there. Keep going. Kind of riff on that. There's two things. Okay. Debbie. The guy, okay. This guy is a despised foreigner. He is a hated alien. I can't emphasize that enough. He would have been despised by anyone in this scene. The other lepers may not have even been willing to hang out with him. Who knows? Because he is this hated alien. So yeah, that's, and one of the uncomfortable parts of the gospel according to Luke is that it is despised foreigners and hated aliens who are portrayed living within the realm of God. Just file that one by title. So, he's a hated alien. That's one. There's one other thing that sets him apart. Barbara was getting a little warm there. And I'll give you a clue. He sees something. He sees something. We're getting warm. We're getting warm. You want me to just, okay, this could take a while, so I'll tell you. All right. He sees that he's healed, which, again, the others, there is no question, you know, they're on their way back to wherever they've been, and they've seen the same thing, and they're probably, their minds are being blown, and again, now they're able to participate fully for the first time in their lives in the community. This is huge. They probably had a thing or two to say about that, by the way. This guy, however, he sees that he is healed, and in that healing, he sees God. And so the question then arises, if we can identify with these lepers in any way, and I have to say, I spent the last 3 days in Las Vegas. I'm feeling a little leprous, and I shouldn't. If there's anybody here visiting who lives in Las Vegas, I'll just apologize up front for anything I say about Las Vegas or the Raiders, either way. But if, you know, if you're feeling a little beat up by life and things are kind of sideways and, you know, your health may be compromised in some way, it doesn't matter. I mean, if you look carefully at the Greek, the original language of this story, leprosy may not have even been the issue. They may just have had a real bad case of psoriasis. Who knows? Anyway, they're beat up and, yeah. Yeah, and they didn't take chances. I mean, again, if you had something that showed, you're an outcast, no questions asked, you know, get out of town. And this guy, in the midst of his brokenness and in the way that he's been beat up by life, that begins to shift in a very quiet way. Again, they're heading... This isn't a bolt of lightning and or Jesus waving his hands or spitting, you know, on them or making mud or, you know, all the other stuff that happens off and on throughout the story. They're just on their way to the priest and they're healed. It just sort of happens out of the blue. And in the process of going, oh my God, something just happened. What in God's name just happened? This guy sees God. And so the question is, when those sorts of things, when those kinds of little shifts, opportunities, encounters with people that you never saw coming, I mean, you're feeling beat up, and all of a sudden something just sort of sweet happens, a moment, you know, it could be anything. I mean, it could be sunrise, it could be a sunset, it could be someone who reaches out to you, it doesn't matter. Something happens, and you go, oh my God, I've just spent the last couple hours convinced that the world is coming to an end, that everything is falling apart, and it's all going to go to hell in a handbasket, and now I'm not so sure. The question is, in those moments of our lives, can we see God? Can we see God? And put in that way, hopefully you're beginning to realize that that this requires a little bit of imagination, because there are all kinds of things that happen. There's cool stuff that happens, or weird things that happen that you can't explain, or, you know, one minute you're, you know, fully invested in your self-pity, and because of some moment, all of a sudden you're not fully invested in your self-pity, and you go, oh, wow, it's kind of a relief, that's nice, whew, hopefully I have one of those again in the next 48 hours or whatever. And then we just keep doing whatever it is that we're doing. The question is, can we expand our imagination just enough to wonder whether or not it has something to do with God? Do you see where this is going? So there we are at Diocesan Convention at the Plaza Hotel in downtown Las Vegas. My room happened to be on the 16th floor of the hotel overlooking Fremont Street, which when we arrived and got settled, I looked out and went, oh my God, it's Fremont Street. This is going to be so cool. Until 10 o'clock at night, I'm trying to go to bed, and the music is blasting. And I mean, it's unbelievable. The walls are shaking. If you've ever been to Fremont Street, if you haven't, okay, if you haven't, go. It's really cool. But if you're trying to fall asleep, it sucks totally. So, I know. So that was my couple of nights in Las Vegas. We won't go into that stream of consciousness. So there we are at the Plaza Hotel. We're in the middle of convention. We're taking care of business. I mean, things were good. The bishop makes his address. He recounts folks, as I mentioned earlier, Chuck and some others who have done wonderful work in this diocese. And then after lunch on Saturday, the treasurer of the diocese steps up to the podium. His name is Matt Estes, wonderful guy from All Saints in Las Vegas. He's their organist there, very talented guy, and he knows how to crunch numbers. Matt gets up there, and he gives this wonderful presentation on this past year's finances in the diocese and our future, the budget for 2017. And he describes next year's budget as fully funded. And then he goes on and he has all kinds of stuff and numbers that make no sense to me whatsoever, but it was very impressive and things kind of balanced out and whatnot. And he finishes his presentation. He's got a little smile on his face because he knows he's done good work for us. And he turns to the 250 or so people that have gathered representing all of the parishes of the Diocese of Nevada and says, so, does anybody have any questions? And from the midst of the crowd comes the voice of Dick French. Now, if any of you have worked with Dick, you know that he is a wonderful man and a curmudgeon all at the same time, all sort of rolled into one, and particularly when it comes to things like finances. I mean, every parish ought to have one of these guys, you know, that asks these questions that bug everybody else. And there's Dick sitting in the crowd, and Matt says, "Oh, are there any questions?" And Dick says, "So what do you mean by fully funded?" And I pictured Dick among the lepers in today's story. And he's the one that goes back to Jesus. There's still a crowd around Jesus. And Dick sort of kind of pushes his way into the crowd, and Jesus is doing whatever he's doing. And Dick pipes up and says to Jesus, "What do you mean my faith has made me well?" Those of you that know Dick who have worked, you know he would do this, right? That's the image that came as we moved on with the budget of the Diocese of Nevada. And then on the way home, it occurred, what if Deacon Betty was one of those lepers? She'd go back to Jesus on her walker now, and she'd, you know, kind of say, excuse me, y'all. And as she approached Jesus, she would turn to people in the crowd, and she'd say, "It's a God thing." And she'd kind of poke them and say, it's a God thing, you know. Y'all, it's a God thing. And she'd get up to Jesus and she'd say, "It's a God thing." And Jesus would say in response to Deacon Betty, "That's a really good line. Do you mind if I borrow it?" And he'd polish it up a little bit and use a phrase like the kingdom of God, but what he's really talking about is what Deacon Betty says all the time. It's a God thing. And this is, y'all, thank you, this is precisely what the story invites us to imagine. That as we move through this life on a daily basis, that we can see all kinds of stuff that are God things, and then respond to all those God things, you know, in some appropriate way. Like, "Oh my God, thank you so much." And as a result of our willingness to exercise the same kind of seeing that this one leper exercises, I mean, he's healed on the way to the priest, and he sees God and gives thanks. And if you and I are capable of doing the same, and of course, one of the reasons we gather on a day like Sunday in a place like St. Peter's, doing what we're doing, celebrating the Eucharist, is to be reminded of what Deacon Betty said, it's a God thing, and to give thanks for all of the blessings of this life. And this becomes the antidote for the way in which a lot of us, myself included, after a night at the Plaza Hotel listening to Fremont Street blow the windows off my room and awakening going, the world is going to come to an end, and I think it did last night, that we can exercise this way of seeing that pulls us out of, you know, the self-pity or that sense of doom that everything's about to fall apart, and put us in a place where all the things that happen in our lives are God things. And then we can extend that to the people around us. Now, this is what we would describe as a life of gratitude. And it goes far beyond what a lot of us, myself included, would describe as feeling grateful. I have to tell you, in all honesty, I don't always feel grateful. But I do my darndest, because I have to answer to you, to live a life of gratitude. You see the difference? And as you and I together exercise these lives of gratitude, imagine how we bless the rest of the world. Just like that leper, all of the lepers for that matter, I mean, going back to their communities, becoming part of their communities for the first time, telling the story of what happened, good Lord, you know, I can now live this full and complete life regardless of anything else that's going on, and live this life of gratitude. That's what we're given. That's what we're invited to participate in. So take a nice deep breath and think of all the God bangs, y'all, that are going on around you.